Shikhatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, normally we're digging into markets or global events, but today, well, today it's about something much closer to home. Literally.
Yeah, we're talking about the buildings, the streets, the spaces we inhabit every single day. We're diving deep into architecture.
But not just like blueprints and cool designs.
Yeah, not at all. We're unpacking the work of Andrew Ballantyne. His whole argument is that architecture is way more important than just function or looks. He actually talks about architectural illiteracy.
Architectural illiteracy. I like that. It feels spot on. We tend to just see buildings as, I don't know, background noise.
Exactly. Like wallpaper, as you said earlier. Yeah. We just don't read what's being communicated by the concrete, the glass, the layout.
Uh-huh.
And Ballantyne says, hold on, that's a huge mistake. Architecture isn't passive. He sees it as both a mirror and a molder.
Okay, unpack that. Mirror and molder.
Well, it reflects who we are, our values, our social structures, what we care about. Think about, say, a giant bank versus a community center.
Right. Very different messages.
But it also molds us. It actively shapes how we feel, how we think, how we interact with each other, often without us even realizing it.
So the stakes are actually pretty high then. If we can't understand this language, we might be living in spaces that are, well, not great for us.
Precisely. Understanding architecture becomes about understanding ourselves, our society, and maybe even regaining some control over how our environment influences us.
Okay, so let's get to know our guide on this, Andrew Ballantyne. Who is he?
He's a professor of architecture at Newcastle University, and he's both an architectural historian and a theorist.
What makes him the right person for this, especially for someone just learning?
It's his background, really. It's very interdisciplinary. He pulls from philosophy, history, design. He's not stuck in just one silo.
Okay.
He's really focused on meaning, not just how buildings are built, but why they're built that way and what impact they have.
That seems key. So he's not just talking aesthetics or engineering alone.
Right. He weaves it all together. Historical context, philosophical questions, practical design stuff. He even connects architecture to things like environmental psychology or urban economics. You wouldn't necessarily expect that.
Mm-hmm.
And importantly, he's trying to bridge that gap, you know, between the often dense academic talk about architecture and just regular people living in these spaces.
Making it accessible.
Exactly, without dumbing it down. He positions architecture not as some niche hobby, but as maybe the most complete expression of a culture.
Wow. Okay. So what's the big idea, the core premise running through his work?
At its heart, he sees architecture as this intersection point. It's where art, science, technology, and how we organize ourselves socially all meet.
Intersection.
Yeah. And it's fundamentally about creating identity, creating meaning. And crucially, architecture is designed either consciously or not to influence our behavior, to help us do certain things, or maybe constrain us from doing others.
So the goal of reading him, or this deep dive, is to get us to see that, to understand our surroundings on a deeper level.
Absolutely. Peeling back the layers, revealing those hidden dimensions, how spaces subtly push and pull on our thoughts, our emotions, often completely unconsciously.
And who is this for? Just architects? Planners?
No, that's the point. He insists it's for everyone. Uh-huh. If you live in a building, if you walk down a street, you are a user of architecture.
We're all users.
So we all have a stake in understanding how it works. It's not just for the experts. It's like basic civic knowledge.
I like how broad the scope sounds. You mentioned moving from like the feeling of a single room all the way up to entire cities.
Yes. He takes you on that journey.
Yeah.
From the really personal, intimate scale feeling at home somewhere, right up to the huge scale of urban planning, public spaces, how we manage collective life.
Exploring how architecture sits between our private worlds and our public lives.
And the cultural values that underpin it all. Yeah.
It's quite a sweep. So where does he start? How does he ground all this theory?
Well, he often starts with something very contemporary, very dramatic. Like the Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao.
Ah, Frank Gehry's building, the shiny, twisty one.
That's the one. It's the perfect case study for what gets called the Bilbao effect.
Right, the idea that one spectacular building can basically revitalize a whole city's image and economy.
Exactly. It puts the city on the map, draws tourists, investment. It really highlights the role of the starchitect, the celebrity designer, and this connection between big architecture, media buzz, and global money.
But is that always a good thing? Does that kind of spectacle help build a better city overall?
That's the tension Ballantyne explores. He uses Bilbao to pivot into talking about urban architecture more broadly. How do these potentially flashy individual buildings fit into the bigger picture?
Into the urban fabric, yeah.
Because a successful city isn't just one landmark, right? It needs that balance between maybe private ambition and the public good, creating places that are walkable, vibrant, accessible for everyone.
Making that connection work is the tricky part, I guess.
Definitely. And what's fascinating is how he immediately connects this very modern issue back to ancient ideas. He brings up Vitruvius.
The Roman architect from like thousands of years ago.
Yeah. Vitruvius laid down these three core principles for good architecture that Ballantyne argues are timeless. Firmitas, utilitas, and venustas.
Okay, Latin breakdown needed here. Firmitas.
Firmus, solidity, durability. Yeah. It has to stand up, basically.
Makes sense. Utilitas.
Utility, function, it has to work for its intended purpose.
Got it. And venustas.
Beauty, delight, aesthetics. The part we sometimes forget is just as crucial.
So strong, useful, and beautiful.
Those three together, Ballantyne suggests, show what a civilization values. Think about Rome. The aqueducts showed incredible firmitas and utilitas, right? Mm-hmm. Bringing water, lasting centuries. Mm-hmm. But their grand public buildings, their basilicas, they were also about venustas expressing power, order, civic pride through beauty and scale.
Okay, I see the connection. And then he brings in this idea of place, something about genius loci.
Yes, the spirit of place. This is really important. It's the idea that architecture shouldn't just be dropped anywhere, regardless of context. It needs to respond to its specific surroundings.
Like the climate, the landscape, the local culture.
Exactly. A dialogue with the setting. He contrasts, say, a generic glass skyscraper that could be anywhere with architecture that feels deeply rooted.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about traditional Japanese houses, designed to work with the seasons, blurring inside and outside. Or the Mesa Verde cliff dwellings in the U.S., literally built into the rock face. They belong there.
So ignoring the spirit of place is a kind of illiteracy, too.
He'd argue it's a major one. It shows a lack of respect for context, for history, for the environment itself.
Okay. This is getting deep. He takes it even more personal, right? Mm. Talking about dwelling versus just building.
Yes. This is where he draws on the philosopher Martin Heidegger. It's a really profound distinction.
Building is just the technical act. Putting up walls.
Right. Whereas dwelling, for Heidegger and Ballantyne, is this deeper experiential state. It's about feeling centered, secure, meaningfully connected to the world through the spaces we inhabit.
So architecture's real purpose isn't just shelter.
It's to create places where we can truly dwell, feel grounded, oriented. It's about belonging.
Can you make that more concrete? Like in a home?
Think about the symbolic power of, say, a hearth. The fireplace, the kitchen table, often the heart of the home, right? Mm. Or the threshold, that simple line between inside and outside, safety and the unknown.
Okay.
Architecture takes a mere structure, a house, and gives it the potential to become a place of real meaning, of dwelling.
And building on that meaning, architecture sets the stage for rituals.
Exactly. It becomes the physical backdrop, the stage set for all kinds of social and religious ceremonies. And the design itself often directs how those rituals unfold.
The obvious example is maybe a church or a cathedral.
Perfect example. The soaring height, the long aisle leading you forward, the focal point of the altar. Mm-hmm. It's all designed to evoke awe, guide movement, and reinforce the sacredness of the ceremony.
And the hierarchy within it too, I suppose.
Absolutely. Or think about a courtroom. It's usually very rigidly designed, isn't it?
Yeah, the judge up high, the jury box, the defendant's placement.
It's all intentional. It architecturally stages the ritual of justice, visually reinforcing the roles and power dynamics. Buildings are never neutral in this sense. They actively shape our actions within them.
Okay, this leads us nicely into some of the big themes Ballantyne really wants us to take away. The first one you mentioned was architecture as environmental psychology.
Yeah, this is huge. He's not just saying buildings might affect our mood. He's saying they are active tools influencing our minds and behavior.
Instruments of consciousness, I think you called it. That's quite a phrase.
It is, and it's based on real effects. We kind of know natural light feels good, right?
Yeah.
But he gets specific, like how ceiling height can change how we think.
Really?
Well, studies suggest lower ceilings might encourage more focused, detailed thinking, maybe feel more intimate, while high ceilings can promote more abstract thought, creativity, a sense of freedom.
Fascinating. Okay, what's the next key theme?
The social construction of space. This follows directly from the ritual idea. Ballantyne stresses that architectural spaces are never politically neutral.
They always reflect power structures.
They reflect and often reinforce them, yeah. Think about office design. Who gets the corner office with the view? It's a direct signal of status.
Or think about cities. Things like gated communities versus open public squares.
Exactly. Or even hostile architecture, those benches designed so you can't lie down on them. These are choices about who belongs, who is excluded. Space encodes social messages.
Right. Okay, third theme. This one feels very current.
Sustainability as an architectural imperative. For Ballantyne, this isn't just a trend or an add-on. It's a fundamental ethical responsibility for anyone involved in building.
But does he see it as limiting creativity, like architects just having to follow eco rules?
Quite the opposite. This is what's brilliant. He argues sustainability should be a stimulus to creativity.
How so?
It forces designers to be smarter, more innovative, to work with the environment, sun, wind, local materials, rather than just overpowering it with brute force engineering and imported stuff.
Mm.
It demands better, more thoughtful design.
That's a great perspective. And the final big theme.
It really ties everything together.
Yeah.
The democratization of architectural knowledge. His ultimate goal.
Bringing it back to architectural illiteracy.
Yes. If architecture shapes our lives so profoundly, psychologically, socially, politically, environmentally, then understanding it can't be just for the professionals. It's essential knowledge for citizens.
So we can participate more meaningfully in shaping the places we live.
Precisely. It's a form of civic empowerment.
You mentioned the book has some really memorable lines that capture these ideas.
It really does. They're great little anchors for his thinking.
What's one that stands out?
Well, the one that feels like a call to action is, architecture is too important to be left to architects alone.
Ah, yes. That sums up the democratization point perfectly. Challenges the experts only idea.
Totally. Then there's this one, which sounds complex, but nails the balancing act involved. Every architectural decision is simultaneously a technical choice, an aesthetic judgment, and a political act.
Okay, let's break that down. Technical, aesthetic, political.
It means you can't separate them. A design choice impacts how the building stands up. Technical, how it looks and feels, aesthetic, and who it serves or excludes, political. Good architecture has to juggle all three.
You can't just focus on one aspect.
Right. And another really evocative one. The best architecture makes the invisible visible.
Makes the invisible visible. What does that mean in practice?
It means great design can reveal things we might not normally notice, like how sunlight moves across a room throughout the day, or how air flows naturally for cooling.
Or maybe it reveals social connections or cultural values.
Exactly. It brings hidden patterns or relationships to the surface through the way the space is organized or built.
Okay, this is all fantastic theory, but how do we actually use this? How can we, you know, apply this knowledge day to day?
Great question. The first step is just becoming an active observer.
Mm-hmm.
Start consciously reading the buildings around you using these ideas.
Like asking why they look the way they do.
Yes. Why does that bank look so solid and imposing? Maybe heavy stone, columns. It's projecting stability, security, maybe even a bit of intimidation.
Compared to, say, a tech startup's office, all glass and open plan.
Right. What's that saying? Transparency, collaboration, modernity, flexibility. You start decoding the message.
That sounds doable. What else?
Think about your own space. Apply the ideas of dwelling to your home.
Okay.
Reflect on it. Does your living space actually encourage connection, or does it feel fragmented? How do you move through it for your daily rituals, making coffee, eating dinner? Can small changes, rearranging furniture, maybe adding plants for a connection to nature, make it feel more like a place of true dwelling rather than just a functional box?
Making a house a home in a deeper sense.
Exactly. Moving beyond just function to meaning and feeling.
And on a bigger scale, civic life.
This knowledge fuels and forms civic engagement. When there are local discussions about new developments, a park, a library, housing, you can ask better questions.
Questions based on these principles.
Yeah. Does this design promote accessibility for everyone? Does it consider the local environment? Does it create welcoming public space? Or does it subtly exclude people? Use the example of Curitiba in Brazil. They became famous for planning that really integrated transport, green space, social needs. It shows it's possible.
So understanding architecture helps us be better citizens.
Absolutely. We can demand more from our built environment.
So reflecting on all this, what's the one thing that really surprised you or stood out most from Ballantyne's work?
For me, I think it was the realization of how much architectural thinking, that synthesis of the technical, the aesthetic, the social, is actually a skill valuable way beyond just designing buildings.
You mean that way of integrating different factors?
Yeah. That ability to hold complexity, to balance competing needs, to think about impact. That's crucial for almost any kind of thoughtful decision-making, whether it's business, policy, or just life.
That's a great point. For me, the biggest takeaway is just how active the built environment is. It's not passive background.
It's constantly talking to us, shaping us.
Exactly. And learning its language through thinkers like Ballantyne feels genuinely empowering. It gives us the tools to not just react to our surroundings, but to actually participate in creating better ones, spaces that support us, connect us, and respect the planet.
Well said.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.